Welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and this is our new extended segment on Saturday morning that's an hour long. And for this very first debut segment, I'm delighted to welcome back to the program Anne Hagedorn. Her new book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. She joins us in studio today. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks, Vic. It's great to be back.
And this book was a long time in coming, but it's certainly hard to keep current on this subject, isn't it? Tell us why you wrote it.
Well, I wrote it for, there are actually three answers to that question. There's the really long one, there's the really short one, and there's the middle one. And so we'll start with the short one, which is one word, democracy. And it's what we journalists do. We feed the need for the citizens' right to know and supply the facts so that people can make good decisions in our democracy. And that was probably my inspiration once I got into the topic. And if you look at my previous two books, actually all three, they could almost be a trilogy, Beyond the River, Savage Peace, and The Invisible Soldiers, on the issue of times in American history when we've been under, democracy's been under extreme duress, and where there have been enormous challenges. And I think this privatization of inherently governmental functions in defense and security is one of those times. It brings up all sorts of questions about what we have a right to know, what we should know, and what is transparent, what the accountability levels are. You know, who are the people and what are the companies and who do they hire for our defense and security? You know, it falls into the category of democracy. And so that's number one. And within that, of course, is the question of the impact of war, that we need to know, we need to see what the full impact of war is. And if we don't know about private security contractors or the privatization of defense and security, we don't have the whole picture. You know, we don't know the total casualties. We don't have the whole picture. It's all bundled into that one word, democracy. And the second easier one, perhaps, is the fact that in the mid-1990s, I did a book on international kidnapping and got into the privatization of kidnap negotiation and the issues of ransoms, et cetera, et cetera. And during that time, I saw the beginning in the post-Cold War era, in the aftermath of the end of the Cold War, the beginnings of a lot of these companies, private military and security companies, and it was a larger story unfolding. I wanted to investigate it more, but I was staying focused on international kidnapping. So then 10 years later, two books later, I decided now is the time to explore this. And the third reason is that I'm fascinated by it. I'm fascinated by the fact that there's this evolving industry, that that there's a new industry that has been evolving over the last 25 years, longer than that, actually, a gradual evolution of these companies. And it fascinates me. And so I wanted my readers to know what I was learning and to be aware of something happening right before their eyes.
Anne Hagedorn joins us. Her book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. You reiterate throughout the book that most Americans aren't even aware that there's an issue. They're not even aware that there are all these, as you call them, PMSCs, that this is creating any kind of a situation. And that's one of the main reasons also why you wrote the book, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Well, we called it The Invisible Soldiers for a reason. There is, it's not that we don't know about private contractors, but what most Americans know, and I know this, I've been on the road for about 2 weeks now, and I know that really the word Blackwater is what pops up all the time. And actually, that company is now on its third name, and in the last month or so has become part of a larger company. So really, a fourth name in a way. But Blackwater is what most people know about. And the misconception, of course, I could have called this book Beyond Blackwater, by the way, because the misconception is that there is an entire industry and it's fascinating. And these are, modern mercenaries. Some people call them modern mercenaries, but actually they're more brokers for mercenaries. But they offer a vast array of services and serve many markets worldwide. And yet we aren't really aware of them. And most people, I think, from what I've learned, in the last couple of weeks, and what I assumed in writing for the general reader for the book, is that as soon as we withdrew from Iraq and we plan to withdraw from Afghanistan, that people think things like this disappear. That, you know, we don't see Blackwater in the headlines, we don't see the scandals, we don't, as we go into these new contingency operations, it's possible that the topic will surface again, but typically it doesn't surface, and the average American isn't aware of it unless there's a scandal. And so my quest was, really to write this a book that was not sensational, compelling, yes, but not sensational, that showed the real story unfolding beyond the headlines and, beyond the scandals.
And you did it. The book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. Ann Hagedorn wrote it. She joins us on the program today. And I know as a journalist that you try to be very balanced. This is not a pro or con book. You're just examining the industry, aren't you?
Yes. Yeah. Showing the how it evolved and where it's going and what the issues are, what we need to be aware of. Especially, I called the Iraq War the First Contractors War. And that's what academics have called it. And in the analysis of the big bonanza of U.S. contracts, that's when a lot of these companies got their start. I mean, you look at Blackwater, I think they had, going into Blackwater, $200,000 worth of U.S. contracts in the year 2000. And they were over $1 billion by 2007. And then there are big companies like Triple Canopy that got a $1.3 billion contract when we withdrew from Iraq and started out in March of 2003. So that's definitely, that was a bonanza for U.S. contractors. New companies started. What we're looking at now is the potential for a second contractors' war. And so the big questions are we ready for that? And is the accountability in place? Is there more transparency? What did we learn from that? And what are we looking at going ahead?
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Ann Hagedorn. Her book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. And we'll continue our conversation in just a moment after this. The Book Nook continues with my guest, Ann Hagedorn. Her book, The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. These companies are located all over the world, aren't they? And their clients are numerous. In fact, I was astonished when I read your book to discover that one of their clients is the United Nations. Now, this just struck me as odd.
Yeah, that's a really good example of how expansive the markets have become for armed security. And what you have to realize about first, let's address the United Nations. A report just came out when I was finishing the book, actually, showing that since 2009, the budget for private security companies has increased by 300% for the United Nations. And it's part of the reason for that is the increasing dangers of peacekeepers in increasingly hostile environments. And so they these companies are, you know, offer themselves as a solution to that. And the United Nations, I think, interestingly, you know, they have a group that is excellent that studies that has studied the issues of mercenaries worldwide. But at the same time, they have been hiring private security companies for armed security. So, but that's just one example of what we were talking about before, that the scope of this, I think another inspiration of mine has been that as the scope of my reporting widened and deepened, and I saw the scope of the industry, I, you know, was excited about telling my readers, showing my readers how that happened. But one of the biggest markets is maritime security. The shipping industry debated this for a long time, which is another fascinating story within the story, but of whether or not to have armed guards on ships. Was that going to cause more violence, or was it going to deter it? And so so you have the shipping industry, multinationals trying to tap resources and develop in hostile environments, and you have our counterterrorism strategies. They're involved in that. Diplomatic security. More than 90% of the guarding of diplomats is done by these companies. Border security, another big area. Border patrol and drone operations. AFRICOM. AFRICOM is our command, our unified command in Africa. And AFRICOM is obviously using them because the U.S. Defense Authorization Act for 2015 has an attached report that talks about the importance of increasing the monitoring as we increase the private contractors in AFRICOM. So, you know, cybersecurity, intelligence analysis, you know, the market is broad, and the services offered by these companies, and some of the companies, you know, specialize in a particular area. And then some people call the department stores of defense and security, and they offer a vast array of unarmed and armed services in this arena. And then so, as markets for force develop and conflicts erupt, you know, these are on-call services, and so they will become brokers for hired guns if that's necessary. But they can respond quickly and find the workers, the recruits, and accommodate to whatever the need might be. That's what they, you know, advertise themselves. So you could see, I mean, it's wherever instability threatens development, you know, wherever military commitments exceed the capabilities of nations, wherever governments are viewed as incapable of supplying defense and security fast enough in times of sudden conflict, you know, those are the categories I sort of define for the markets. So, whew, it's a lot.
We have had some of our leaders, our governmental leaders, expressing concern as this industry has burgeoned. In fact, a few years back, we had Hillary Clinton on the record being opposed to the growth of this industry and our increasing usage of it. President Obama has been on the record back in the past when he was a senator about his concerns about this growing industry and our dependence upon it. Yet the views of those politicians and others seem to be evolving.
Yes, there hasn't been a tremendous amount of progress in the area of accountability and oversight nationally. I mean, there are some developments, and if you If our audience wants to read a really interesting government report coming out, you can get it online, the August 2011 report coming out of a three-year study of this by the Wartime Contracting Commission. You can find out sort of the efforts being made in what that group that studied it for 3 years claimed was an urgent situation and big need for reform. And before, as they say, in fact, I could quote you the, I have it right here. I can quote you the last paragraph of the foreword of this government commission report, which I say in my source notes. I love writing source note essays because I think sources for these books are fascinating. I mean, you read the source notes essay, you find out where the author went and where future readers can go for more information. But anyhow, in this is a page turner. This, you know, read my book first. But then, if you want to read more on the topic, you read read this. But the last paragraph of they say, delay and denial are not good options. There will be a next contingency. Whether the crisis takes the form of overseas hostilities or domestic response to a national emergency like a mass casualty terror attack, reform will save lives and money and support U.S. interests. Reform is essential now. Have you ever seen something like that in a government report? So there is the commission report. There are efforts there in the early days in the Obama administration. In 2009, there were efforts. You can see several of them in the book. But and on the part of the Army, because the Department of Defense did not start collecting statistics, as you will learn in this very lively congressional hearing in the fall of 2007. They did not start collecting until 2007. And then there is the development of what's called the U.S. Army Contracting Command, which was, I think, in the fall of 2008. And so there was some effort to centralize and to increase accountability. But on the part of the Obama administration, actually, the actual regulation or increase of oversight, it just hasn't happened. And actually, historically, between 2009 and 2011, we had, I think, the largest surge in the use of private contractors in a contingency operation than ever before. And also, in that period of time, just as an aside, which is not an aside. Actually, it's a very crucial detail. The contractor casualties in that period of time, it was between, I think, March of 2009 and June of 2011, exceeded military the deaths of traditional troops. And so, you know,
but we don't hear about that.
But we don't hear about that. And, you know, it's popping up now, of course, as an issue. What role are these companies going to play as we go forward? And of course, my book shows you the origins of the book, moves you through its narrative nonfiction, moves you through, takes you to some interesting places. We can talk about that later, and some interesting characters. And then up to actually 3 days before the uncorrected proofs were due, which was at the end of April, I think, because 3 days before that, there was news of sending billions of dollars in Apache and attack helicopters and missiles to I think it was $6 or $7 billion to Iraq, and these companies were starting to get contracts again, but this time from the Iraq government. And so that's when I started calling them global wild cards, because, you know, that's an issue too, obviously. What must be addressed now is the book takes you up to the beginning of this situation in Iraq, and so taking what you learn from the book into the situation now, you have to ask the questions: what role will these companies play? And, you know, for every U.S. contract, you have layers of subcontractors. Where are the subcontractors coming from? Which countries? Who trained them?
The book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. Ann Hagedorn wrote it. She joins us in the studio today. And as we're recording this, you just noted how it's impossible to keep a book on this subject current because we have news developing every single day. We are drawing down troops. We have drawn down troops in Iraq since we invaded Afghanistan 13 years ago, and then the subsequent invasion of Iraq. We have spent trillions of dollars. Our economy has suffered greatly. And after this drawdown, now suddenly it looks like the war drums are beating again. And are we going to have invisible soldiers going after ISIS? How's this going to be done? We have drones that are being controlled by invisible soldiers. How far removed are we becoming from our own wars?
Well, that's a really important question, and I wonder if you would let me move that into a question that I get on the road a lot, which is, why should we care?
Exactly.
You know, and I have to say that what plagued me while I was writing this book, because I knew that, you know, part of what I was trying to do, which was probably the fourth reason for writing it, was for future historians so that they could, you know, look back on this period of time and see how things evolved and how we moved into this dependence. By the way, the Wartime Contracting Commission report talks about how enormously over-reliant we are on private contractors in the full scope of them. But the question of your question, you know, morphs into the question of why should we care? And many people over and over say, you know, why not just look the other way and just let them do our dirty work, you know, and let them do whatever defense and security services are required. And you know, as we get into the question of one image to have is that of a spear, I think. I thought of this the other day while on the road, that the tip of the spear really is combat troops. And then everything that's in support of that is the rest of the spear for the weapon, for our weapons of war, whatever. So that gives you a sense of how big the support is. Why should we care? And that's, you know, even in just asking the question, every time someone asks it, or when I've asked myself when I was working on the book, it's really the answer's almost in the question, which is indifference. You know, one of the inspirations for writing the book, so people have the facts, so that the plague of indifference can't continue. It's dangerous, and that's a real threat to our security. One of my sources who said to me at one point, "What's all the fuss about? You know, why can't we depend on them? Why can't we going forward? Why can't we do this?" And so, all of that there. Besides the indifference, the answer to the question is that it is really transparency and oversight. Whether it's the use of companies for local police for training, or it's use for diplomatic security, the guarding of diplomats at consulates and embassies, or whether it's the use of them as as advisors. Operating drones. What happens is that if we don't know who these people are, we are removed from the defense of our nation or of our local communities. You know, we're removed from it. And then if you have it, as you say, if you're looking at these companies that do have subsidiaries that operate drones, and we have privatized a good deal of that, then you're looking at a new level of depersonalized warfare, basically. It's then the average citizen is two layers removed from conflict. You know, a machine operated by an employee of a private firm.
Unless you're that citizen that the drone is chasing, then you're not two levels removed from that drone.
That's very good. But you know, you have to think about that. I mean, you have to really think it through. What does it mean? You know, I had a three-star Marine general. I interviewed a lot of people in the military who was very concerned about this because of the concept of allegiance to nation, you know, and you know, where does that come into, what is the long-term effect of the motivation of companies and individuals when they're making money from it? What is the long-term motivation? And then where is the passion? I mean, this guy, he was very, like I said, I interviewed some just brilliant people within the military. And one of them said, look, the key word is passion, you know, because, and the father of Kadeem, I'm sure we'll get into the story of Kadeem in a second as our audience.
That'll be next hour.
Yeah, that'll be next hour. Yeah. And so, it said you have to feel something to win a war. And so you have people, you have conflicts that a nation is committed to, and then the citizen is two layers away from it. And one way to get the citizens more involved is transparency, obviously, just to let them in on, you know, what's going on in terms of who is defending and securing their nation.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. Ann Hagedorn's my guest. Her book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. She joins us in studio, and she just mentioned a gentleman named Kadeem. That is a compelling story, but before we talk about Kadeem, you interviewed a lot of people for this, and some of these people that run these companies have rather murky backgrounds. Some of our listeners are probably familiar with Blackwater and a gentleman named Knight who was involved with that company, who now apparently has a company in some other country. But there's a gentleman you met who's a former British soldier named Spicer, and you actually interviewed this guy.
I did.
What was that like?
Well, it was interesting.
You're listening to the Book Nook on WYSO. My guest is Ann Hagedorn. The book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. We'll continue with our conversation right after this. In case you've just tuned in, this is the Book Nook, and we're coming to you at a new time on Saturday mornings between 7 and 8 o'clock. And I'm in a conversation right now with Ann Hagedorn. Her new book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. And we were talking, getting ready to talk about some of the individuals involved in this story, real people with real stories, and Ann Hagedorn tells a lot of them in this book. Ann, let's talk about some of those.
The book is narrative nonfiction, and so I take the reader on a journey through the evolution of this industry and basically the privatization of defense and security here that, you know, in the ensuing industry that's now international. But so I got to put a human face on all those components. We'd be dealing with keywords, contractor, accountability, privatization. So you got to humanize it because it's a fascinating story. You don't want that to fall into the abyss of keywords that aren't so interesting, don't sound so interesting until you get into them. But I've interviewed people within the industry and former mercenaries who developed companies and have become very successful entrepreneurs, and interviewed military people. I spent a lot of time at the Command and General Staff College at Fort Leavenworth in Kansas interviewing military people. Military, various levels, and sitting in on seminars about this topic or having group discussions. Interviewed humanitarian aid workers and people within various agencies of the government, of course. And I discovered, the reader goes to London. A lot of my work began in London. There's that great line in the book somewhere, the quote from the a reporter years ago about mercenaries saying, if you want to learn about the privatization of war, you have to go to England first because of the evolution of their industry. But so I take the reader to London, to Geneva, to Kansas, to D.C., to New Mexico, lots of different places, and introduce them to people who are very involved in this. And I think I'm quite fair, you know, in terms of who is profiled. And I think it does give the reader a sense of the individuals, including the person who runs what used to be called the International Peace Operations Association. They had to change the name. That's the trade association for these companies. They had to change the name because it was too Orwellian, I guess, to the International Stability Operations Association. Actually, it was a couple weeks before I interviewed the head of it. But fascinating people who are very much represent this industry and this tectonic shift, basically, into privatization of defense and security, which is a major change in how we conduct war and how we defend and secure our nation.
You have a lot of hard numbers in this book, too. You describe the billions of dollars that are just unaccounted for. What happened to all that money that these contractors were given? What happened to it?
Well, that's a tough question, and it's the statistics. When anybody asks me whether the challenges of this book, one of them was definitely, we sort of alluded to it earlier, was how to end it, because it keeps evolving and changing, how to end the book, but where to end it. And then the other is the statistics, how to define the revenue of this industry, how to even define the industry, which part, how to embrace it. You know, there are a lot of private companies. So there are private transactions with private companies. You know, these are private companies working for multinationals. I mean, how do you grab that? So, I mean, how do you get the exact numbers? And then there's the issue of unaccountable numbers that came out in the Wartime Contracting Commission report that I referred to earlier. And that was a $38 billion fund called the Miscellaneous Foreign Contractors Fund. And the commissioners could not find the companies, and I think it was from 2003 to 2011 that money was spent. And
$38 billion,
that's
the petty cash drawer.
That was
that's where we're not sure what happened to that $38 billion.
That's right. Don't know the companies, don't know the services. That's what they say in the report. I mean, that's just one example of an issue. How much money is involved? You can find exact numbers, you know, like for the U.S. Army Contracting Command, like I said. But in terms of it, and you can find exact numbers for perhaps Homeland Security's big budget for these companies. But to bundle it all together into numbers for the industry, you know, the range goes from $50 billion a year to $250 billion a year. You know, but you can't completely nail that down, which is really frustrating for someone as concerned about accuracy as I always am. So, but it's also fascinating. And that detail that they revealed, you know, you can see the problems that commission had for 3 years of work on this to try to determine what the $38 billion was. And, you know, part of that, the road there leads to, they always say follow the money, leads to the issue of subcontractors. And so, you know, a miscellaneous foreign contractors fund. So U.S. contracts then go to might go to a company that is international, is defined internationally, and that company might subcontract. Or in the case of Benghazi, a foreign contractor was Blue Mountain Group. And that was a British company. And so, you know, we don't know in that $38 billion what it was used for. And that has, quite frankly, plagued a lot of people. And it's probably one of those big flags that wave in front of you when you start thinking about what I defined earlier as the second contractor's war. How can we avoid that again? And how can we know exactly how to go forward and what to expect if we still don't know what that $38 billion was used for? So that's just an example.
The whole industry doesn't really lend itself to transparency, so we have these opaque situations where we can't really see where the money trail leads. It's almost like offshore accounts turn into this and that, and who's getting paid and who's actually doing the work. We have contractors who contract other people who contract other people, and we have mercenaries. Well, they're not mercenaries, but we have people working for these companies who are from other countries. We don't know who these people are. It's all very confusing. It's a muddle. Plus, we have a situation potentially where we could end up fighting our own contractors working for another company that has contractors. It's insane.
Yeah. Well, it's, what I've tried to do in the book is to be as, like I said, fair and as not, I want it to be compelling, but not sensational. And so, but when you start putting some of the pieces together, it's not really sensational. It's just it's a matter of huge concern. And what you're saying is something that has been expressed by a lot of very smart and informed people whom I interviewed. A perfect example of this concern, actually my editor came up with the term global wildcards because this potential, the people within the military expressing to me the concern that eventually there could be a standoff between a U.S. company and U.S. contracted company or U.S. trained military that have been recruited by one of these companies, retired and recruited in an international, in a contingency operation. It's a big concern. And it, of course, I think I mentioned earlier that 3 days before the uncorrected proofs were due, I had to include this new development that the Iraqi government was hiring some of these same companies, and I wanted to include a line that said, but I stopped myself because I didn't want to sensationalize that, you know, what if the Iraqi government then becomes an ally of Iran or becomes an ally of a company
of somebody else we don't like.
Of somebody else. And so I didn't put that line in. Uh-huh. And I talked to my editor about it. And that was, at the end of April. And it would have been prescient if I had done that. But these are the questions you have to, and we can talk about the international efforts to monitor this, if you'd like to talk about that.
We could, but we still need to talk about Kadeem.
Oh, yes.
He
okay.
puts a human face on this.
Okay.
And you follow this gentleman, Kadeem, and tell us a little bit about him.
Well, Kadeem is an interesting story. His name is Kadeem Al-Kanani, and he was born in Iraq and developed after his family was persecuted by Saddam Hussein. He became, as I say in the book, he develops his whole sense of hatred through hating Saddam Hussein. But he eventually ends up After everyone dies in his family, he ends up in the United States and eventually becomes a U.S. Special Forces operative in Iraq. And he's fluent in several languages, so he was used a lot for translations in interrogations and all kinds of intelligence situations in Baghdad. And so the story, in short, is that he was, after going through a U.S. inspections control point one day, coming back from 2 days of interrogations, I think, in Baghdad, he was shot by a private contractor. And it destroyed his career. His dream was to be a special forces officer someday. But and so in the book, you sort of see how his life kind of fell apart, his career fell apart. Luckily, he survived it. And then how the industry symbolically, I mean, they symbolize sort of the, here's this person who is so passionate about what he's doing for our nation, and that happens, and then an industry that's soaring. So it's a fascinating story, and I discovered it through court documents at one point, and included it. He's one of the people that my readers will learn about.
And another one is this fellow that you interviewed, the former British soldier who has sort of a murky background.
Oh, are you talking about Tim Spicer? You must be. Yeah. Yeah, interesting. I think at one point I say that his background as a quote-unquote kind of notorious former mercenary. I don't know. People have defined him as a mercenary for years. Actually, it benefits his own story because it shows how successful he's become. I mean, his company got the largest U.S. security contract in Iraq. And I did interview him. And it was an interesting experience because I got very much on the inside of in the mind of the industry, basically, because he explained to me how he views the importance of these companies. And that's what I tried so hard to do, to show people the points of view of everyone involved in this. I mean, if you want to do a favor to future historians or to the government now, or the audience now, the readers, you really have to dig deeply into the points of view. And so I spent 5 hours with Tim in interviewing him, and I was fascinated. Everything from his favorite books to his philosophy of this industry. I could read you a quote that shows you where the market, it's this on-call service, on-call emergency military service that is the selling point. And what you see when you read the book is that that there's dedication to that. There's a belief that, and you know, this is why, I mean, the ultimate goal for me is to create a debate, a national debate, discourse on the subject, because when you see the adamant concerns of some of the humanitarian and human rights organizations, Human Watch First and the War on Want in England, and the really concerns in some congressmen and women about why they're why they are extremely concerned about the long-term effect, you know, allowing companies that make a living off of conflict, they call it peacekeeping, but peace operations or efforts toward peace through resolving conflicts, but the long-term potential effects of this. And so I show both sides. I really got into the core of passion, I think, on the topic, because I got to the passion on both sides. But, yeah, so I interviewed Tim for 5 hours. Yeah.
The book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. Anne Hagedorn wrote it, and it was recently published by Simon & Schuster. And Anne, I think we probably need to talk a little bit about you. I know that you had a career in journalism with the Wall Street Journal, but you also have some roots here, right here in Southwest Ohio, don't you?
Yes, I do. Born in Dayton.
Very good. That's what we wanted to hear.
Yes. Yeah. Oakwood High School?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I could do the cheerleading if you wanted.
Please do.
L-U-L-U-L-U-M-B. L-U-L-U-L-U-M-B. Lumberjacks fight.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Oakwood Lumberjacks.
Yeah. It's on the real thing. Yeah.
Wow. Anne Hagedorn is our guest. Her book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. And I have had the pleasure of reading your other books, the more recent ones. I've read Savage Peace, and I've read Beyond the River. And one gets the sense, reading these works, that you just go into your cocoon, and you don't come out for a really long time. You just completely submerge yourself when you're working on these projects.
That's true. And that's why at the beginning of the acknowledgments, I quoted John Steinbeck. Did you notice that? He wrote that in Working Days, his journals on Graves of Wrath, where he says, if you can't tolerate solitude, you can't be a writer. Join the theater. Mm-hmm. Of course, he didn't make it to the stage where this point in time where authors have to go on the road and be performers, I guess. But it takes a lot of discipline and a lot of concentration, a lot of sorting through things. And but it's never a solo performance. You know, you always have a support cast, and that's friends, family, and as I always say, the editors, past and present, because their words are always in your mind. Their cautions, like my first editor at the Wall Street Journal, who said, never fall in love with your own writing. So you're sitting there with a paragraph that you think, wow, this might be the best paragraph I ever wrote. And then you realize it's ruined the flow of the narrative. And you think, God, I have to take that out. It's like one of the hardest things a writer can do, but you have to do it.
I see we're running out of time, Anne. You have some amazing material in your new book, The Invisible Soldiers. And I think maybe we should end this with kind of a telling quote from the book. Do you have a favorite or one that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I do. I have several, actually, but this one I think is very all-embracing, and it's from a former British Army officer who's been very active within the industry and actually a director of one of the companies at one point. Very bright guy. He said in one of the interviews I did with him in London that private military and security companies will evolve into multinational and multifunctional firms so that governments and corporations will go to them as single servers and get used to relying on them. Then they'll succeed more and more, and what seems hidden now will simply be integrated so that future generations won't know the difference. Traditional militaries will become smaller and smaller, and the industry itself will continue to grow.
Hmm.
Very insightful.
The book is The Invisible Soldiers, How America Outsourced Our Security. Anne Hagedorn has been our guest today on the program, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you. Oh, Vic, thank you so much. This has been a really great experience. Being interviewed by you is always one of my inspirations for writing books.
Well, thank you. You've been listening to The Book Nook. I'm Vic McInnes. Thanks. Thanks for listening to The Book Nook today. And some of you probably recall when we first started interviewing authors on WYSO back in 1994, that the program ran an hour. So it's great to be able to do hour-long interviews again, and we'll be coming your way on Saturday mornings at 7 o'clock with The Book Nook. And a new time on Sunday for our half-hour segments tomorrow morning at 10:30 rather than the old time of 11. We'll bring you our 30-minute Book Nook program. And my guest on the program tomorrow morning at 10:30 will be Samuel Fromartz. He's written a book called In Search of the Perfect Loaf. And if you're into bread, you won't want to miss my interview with Samuel Fromartz. That's the Book Nook tomorrow morning, Sunday, at 10:30. The Book Nook is recorded at Soundspace in Yellow Springs and engineered by Chris Hertzler.